On this episode of Made for This, I sit down for the conclusion of my conversation with an Enneagram expert, Beth McCord. Let's get practical with this stuff. It's episode 68. Let's do this.
And so your mature part of your personality now can tell the less healthy part, like, I know this isn't fun to grieve, but it's necessary and it's good. And that's where real growth happens. So if any of us think growth is going to be easy in this, oh, it is so not. And also, I want people to recognize about the Enneagram is that it's going to show everything, the good and the not good. It's a non-judgmental friend. And it is, but it's not there to expose you to shame. It's to help you to see, I do struggle in this area, but there is hope and there's freedom, but I have to do the hard work in moving towards it.
So you figured out your Enneagram type, but now what? How does this really help me in the world? Should I go for certain types of jobs because of my type? Welcome to the Made for This podcast. I'm Alex Street, and we have another expert on the show. Every now and then, I like to bring on someone who is an expert in their field that will help us on our journey. Rather than simply sharing their story, I hope to glean as much practical and valuable information as possible to help you take the next step in doing what you're made for. Beth McCord is going to bring us into the transformational world of the Enneagram, a personality typing system, to help you discover what is motivating you to do what you do from way down in your core. Beth is your Enneagram coach from yourenneagramcoach.com, where she is making a huge impact in people's lives by helping them finally understand why they think and act the way they do to be the best version of themselves. In the first half of our conversation, Beth McCord helped us understand the upfront details making each of the 9 Enneagram types unique. It was a whirlwind, but so helpful as you enter this process of discovery. Now, in today's conversation, I ask Beth, what do we do with all that stuff? If I'm able to clearly identify my type, what's the next step? When I figure out that I'm an investigative thinker or type 5, how will that affect my relationships? Or how will knowing that I'm a protective challenger type 8 really help me with my team at work? And what if I think I'm actually 2 or 3 types all lumped into one? Is that even possible? Beth is an expert on the Enneagram and graciously dives into any question that I have. This is going to be really valuable for you as we try to spend some time on the practical presence of all the types of the Enneagram. It's time to get into it. Here's my conversation with your Enneagram coach, Beth McCord. If you're okay kind of going through my wild and out there 7
yes.
brain right here, then
let's be spontaneous, right?
There we go. Let's do something new. Okay, I guess first question, so as somebody's discovering this, can they, you said even your assessment kind of gives a top 2, as people are listening to this, does it make sense for them to be like, oh, I'm a type 1 and a type 7, to label yourself as, oh, I'm so close to both of those, I must be both of them, or how does that work? Is somebody one type always? Are they really only one? And maybe even explain a little bit about the wings with that, but help mm-hmm. me understand sort of a multiple type idea there, because I know that some people are confused about that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And so just to kind of reiterate, so this is where the Discovering You course will be super helpful. Mm-hmm. So whatever I say after this, if everyone's going, huh? The Discovering You course will explain it all. And there's a beautifully designed workbook that goes with it that lays it all out. So, but cool. Yes, we all have a main type, and that main type stays the same, but as in like the core motivations. But we have so many other, the types that we utilize, and I'll explain a few of the ways, because I can't go into all of the levels and the ways. I'll take me as an example as a type 9. Now for some of those out there, they've never seen the symbol before. The symbol, is a 9-pointed star, and the type 9 is at the very top, at the top point of that star, and the type 1, so it's like a clock, but instead of going all the way to 12, it goes to 9. Right. And so when you're looking at that, the 2 numbers on either side of the type 9 are 1 and 8. And those are my wings. And so each type has wings, and they're only the numbers directly next to your type. So I have 1 and 8. For you as a 7, you have 6 and 8. And what happens is we utilize those, the attributes of those numbers, to different degrees. And so think about your wings being like salt and pepper, and you, your type is a filet mignon. So you're cooking this beautiful steak, perfectly, but without flavoring it, it's so beautiful when we can use our wings in a way that enhances our personality type, that brings the very best. But here's the thing. So when you're healthy and you're utilizing your wings in a healthy way, it really is beautiful, right? But we can also overseason and underseason, meaning we can also access our wings when in a not so great way. So as a type 9, I can utilize my 1 and my 8 in healthy ways where, let's say the 1, I can become more active in doing procedures and tasks and developing systems. And with my 8, I can be more assertive and confident and getting out there and doing my thing. But I can also use them in a not so great way where I can become more critical and nitpicky. Now, I'll still do it in a 9 way. I won't be a type 1, but I'll maybe be passive aggressive with my criticalness. Maybe I won't be so outward with it. But then also I can use the 8 where maybe I get really frustrated with people, but again, it might be in a passive aggressive way, instead of an overtly aggressive way. And so by understanding how my wings work, help me to understand when I'm doing well and when I'm not doing well. But I still remain a 9. My core motivations, that's why we went over the core motivations earlier, was because that still is what everything is hinging on. The reason why I become, let's say, more critical using my 1 in a not so great way is because the type 9 stuff has been activated inside me. And then the last thing in why your numbers, you can be like for what you just said, a 7 and a 1, well, those seem very different, right? So 7s are fun and spontaneous and free and like, let's have fun. And the 1s are very much more like follow the rules, got to do what's right. So you're like, how can someone think they're, you know, one or the other? Well, if you look at the 9-pointed star, each type or each, you know, dot on the symbol has 2 lines that come off of it that connect to 2 other types. So for you as a 7, you are connected to 1 and type 5. So when you're under stress as a type 7, you take on some of the average, the unhealthy attributes of type 1. But the 1, when they're growing, they actually take on some of the healthy attributes of the type 7. So depending on how you're doing could really vary on how do you see yourself. So let's say for you, Alex, let's say you're really stressed out and like you're in a season of stressed out and you're seeing that 1 really pop in. Well, you might answer my assessment with a lot of oneness, and that might pop up really high on your assessment because you're in that state of stress. And that's why it's really important to understand how the Enneagram works to be able to see how the scores really are playing out. And so that really kind of helps. But then if a type 1, let's say, takes the assessment and they have a lot of 7 popping up, they might be in a state of they're really doing well. They're really growing. They're transforming. And so they might live a little bit more spontaneous than they ever have before. And they might be resonating with some of those 7 qualities, and that might be popping up. So that's why the assessment can only be so accurate because there's so many nuances to it. And so it's really beneficial for each person to learn about all 9 types and the core motivations, and then to do a lot of self-observation. So for you, let's say trying to find your type, Alex, you would be like, okay, so why is it that when I'm bored, I really get anxious and just feel like ants in my pants and I've just got to go? Well, if you would see, oh, well, one of my core fears as a type 7 is boredom, to be limited, to be deprived. It makes me want to just flee out into the world to not be there. Right. And so so by seeing what activates your heart, whether positive or negative, helps you to land on which one is your main type.
It's so good. And this has been part of my journey was when I first got into it, I thought I was a 7, like bang on right away. And then I listened to some more and you listen to interviews with people and you start to go, oh, no, wait, that sounds actually more like I am. And so then for a while, I thought I was a 9, mostly because of the slothness, because I was just, I think it was in a really tired season.
And, right.
And very peaceful. Like I don't like conflict and all of that. And a lot of the characteristics of a 9, but I didn't really go into the core motivation, just really the outward, what they show. And as I looked at that stuff, I was starting to identify in that way. And then I went into I did more research and got more into the core of who a 7 is and where it comes from, really, as that separation early on from the loved the caregiver, and a lot of that work that, again, this just goes deeper and deeper and deeper into your soul, right? Into who you are. And you can just keep going and explore this stuff. And as I did that, then I realized, oh, wait a second, it's not peace. Like, it's not conflict that I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of, like, not joy.
Yes.
Right. And so right. It's actually an effort in my home with my kids and with my wife to, I stop arguments quickly because I sense, wait a second, there's like an extinguishing of joy going on here.
Right.
We need to put an end to that. And as I start to realize that, then you can move into the health of that. And you can also move away from where that can make things awkward and not allow for sadness, for grief, for understanding to come along. And so it's been so fascinating to dive into this in my own life. And it's only brought health. And it's really quite amazing.
Well, and I was going to say also for you, 7, identifying more strongly with a 6 wing. Now, we use both our wings to varying degrees. So some people use one wing more than the other, like a lot more. Some people use them both to a pretty decent amount. But you identify more with the 6 wing really does make sense for me. Even the scenario you just said, one, your wife is a 9, so she's not going to want, you know, there to be people upset in the house.
Yeah.
But also the 6 is the committed, loyal, faithful, dutiful one. They want to make sure everyone is connecting, that there's security there. And so it definitely makes sense why you as a 7, that you would want to utilize that as well. To not have discord. Whereas a 7 with a strong 8 wing, they're not going to be as threatened by some discord in the house. They're going to be like, oh, that's natural. That's what happens. And so that makes sense. And that's why understanding the layers, hopefully you can learn from someone that does it in a Cliff Notes version. It really matters because everything starts to make a little bit more sense. But that's why it's so important, to not look at just the outward manifestations or keywords. Because when we hone in on keywords and not the meaning behind them, we can get off track. And so that's why, you know, I wanted to take the time to get to those core motivations. Because like what you just said was perfect. You fear the loss of joy and happiness. Mm-hmm. I fear tension. Like tension feels like I'm being a 2-liter Coke with a lid on it and being sugared up inside. It's so uncomfortable. There's so much pressure, fear. And I mean, it's any tension. It feels like that, like death is about ready to ensue. Even though if I logically know that that's not true. And that, so what you're saying is, no, I wasn't really doing it because that feeling. I was doing it because there's not going to be fun and we're going to be trapped in this like not pleasant place. Is that right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is where, like, I love Inside Out, the movie, right? The Pixar movie. And it's just so funny how much that just all shows up. And joy is like the quintessential 7, right? It's
absolutely
fantastic.
To get rid of sadness the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But then at the end, what's so beautiful is because for 7s to really grow, they actually need to embrace life all the way from happy all the way to sad. And that's what you see the very end of the movie, that Joy sees how joy and sadness at the end of the, like where they're looking back at the girl's life and how those two together brought richness in life. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of that movie, is it's showing, especially for Joy, I mean, all of us, but how Joy grew in her ability to encapsulate all the emotions, not just her own.
Yeah. And so, for me, and I'm just to introduce another question here with a bit more of my story, like a few years ago, I went through the death of both of my parents within a couple of years. And so there was this immediate breakthrough of grief, unwanted, unwarranted grief in my life that I had to experience and had to face up. And since then, like, that has really introduced something into my life and really brought me to this place of awareness and health. And I guess what I'm wondering, as we just talk about that, those growth moments and those understandings, is that kind of the goal then for each of these types to recognize your own self, to observe your own type, and understand it enough that you can actually dive further into it, not just, you know, the desire and the longings, but to embrace the weakness and the fear in that as part of your full character? Shy away from that or move away from that, but the whole process here is to embrace it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what we do all the time, is run away from it. But we don't realize how much that is tripping us up, or really quicksand. So for me, remembering the sloth of the nine, so not knowing myself very well. Well, the beginning when you heard my story, that I've known the Enneagram for a long time, but I don't toot my own horn. I don't make a big deal of it. Who really cares? It doesn't really matter. And I would just hide, and study until I really felt the spark and the calling and the passion to rise up. But it still felt feels very uncomfortable to say what I do. But I've had to change it in my mind where, Beth, you're not tooting your own horn for your own sake. This isn't about arrogancy and boastfulness. This is about helping others. And if you don't get out there and share what you know, you're not going to bless others, which is what I want to do. And so I've had to learn that my own path is asserting myself, which goes against what the nine wants to do. The lower part, the not so healthy part, the healthy part of the nine is, no, I have something to offer and I'm here. I'm moving forward. I want to share with you what I have because it's going to benefit you. And when I do that, I do see others blessed. Now it's super hard. Growth is always really hard. It goes against everything of our less healthy part of our personality. So it will throw a temper tantrum all the time, telling you this is wrong, don't do that. But that's where the mature part of your personality needs to show up and parent it, to guide it, saying, I know this feels awkward or feels bad, but it's actually really good. And that's kind of what you've experienced with the death of your parents, that grief, there's a place for it. There is healing that comes from going there. And so your mature part of your personality now can tell the less healthy part, like, I know this isn't fun to grieve, but it's necessary and it is good. And that's where real growth happens. So if any of us think growth is going to be easy in this, it is so not. And also, I want people to recognize about the Enneagram is that it's going to show everything, the good and the not good. It's a non-judgmental friend. And it is, but it's not there to expose you, to shame you. It's to help you to see, I do struggle in this area, but there is hope and there is freedom. But I have to do the hard work and moving towards it. So what I tell people, it's like a river. Like, let's say you're at the base of the river and it's flowing towards you. At that base of the river, it's about ankle deep. No problem. You could stand there all day long. But around you is like a sewer and like a trash dump. It's disgusting. Well, that's where we're at when we're not very healthy. And what we want to do is move up the river. Now, the further you move up the river, the deeper it gets and the harder the current. But man, is it beautiful and glorious up there. Wow. I mean, it is just the most amazing place to be, but it is hard as heck to get up there, and everything is pushing against you. And that is the lower part of your personality that's throwing the temper tantrum, that's trying to convince you to just, like, just sit in the water, let the stream pull you back downward. And that would be easy, but you're back down at the sewer and the grossness. So either you can choose that, or you can choose the harder path. But man, is it glorious and beautiful. And so as you see all of your personality, the good and the not so good, just remember that we have so much to offer the world if we're willing to own up to all of us and not shy away from seeing all of it, and to know that there is so much good to be offered in ourselves, for ourselves, but also for each of us that we're in relationship with.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, it comes back to the core motivation again of this podcast and a lot of my work is to discover and do what you're made for. It's this understanding that there's something at your core. There's something there that's unchangeable. I always have this vision, this picture of like a pool ball. Like it's just this really smooth but hard thing that's just in your gut. It's just in your core and it's unchanging. And it's the presence of God in your life that starts there from the beginning and has designed you, made you for a certain path and journey and personality and mission and vision in this life that only you can uniquely bring. I think I just have one question then that might be helpful is like, when do these personalities start typically? Like when can we look back on when we're trying to do the discovery work of this? How far are we going back to really be like, oh, that's why, or that's where that began? Is there kind of a quick understanding of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are probably several views out there. What I would say that I've heard the most from Enneagram experts and my view is that we're born with our type. Yeah. But both nurture and nature, I think, play a huge role, meaning I believe we're born with our type. So if you think about all nine types having as if we see the world through a different shade of sunglass, like let's say you wear red and I wear purple. So we're born with that lens on that. So we see the world. So let's say you and I are twins. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And you are wearing red and I'm wearing blue. So we're fundamentally seeing the trees and the birds and everything, but we're seeing it from a different perspective. So if you and I go through, let's say, a hardship or even trauma together, we are going to interpret it and see it, and then bring it into ourselves in a different format. Mm. Or let's say triplets. So there's the nine, me, you, the seven, and the eight. And we all go through some sort of an abuse. The nine might withdraw and go within themselves and kind of just go along to get along. Hopefully that person won't do it again. Maybe if I accommodate enough, then they won't do it or I'll please them. The eight will probably become aggressive and protective and assertive, and they cannot be harmed and blindsided and betrayed again. And then the seven might flee out away from the house to play with buddies or do fun things just to get away from it. So you can see that the way people are going to see it and perceive it and protect themselves is going to be through their own personality mode and defensive mechanisms.
Wow. Okay. That's really helpful. Okay. And then I think just to bring this all together into, again, this journey of discovering and doing what you're made for, which is so much of what we focus on here, usually talking with people about what they're doing and how do they get on into that journey, and then really helping people discover their strengths and their skills and their passions so they can go on the right direction in their life. And with that being such a focus, I want to just ask you and help you dig or ask for you to dig into a bit of how you think, somebody understanding their type might affect their journey in choosing the right career and the right relationship and those sort of things. And if you can do this, actually, I'm just noticing that we've spent a lot of time talking about kind of the head center and the gut center, they're like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1.
Yeah, that's right.
So even as we dive into this, and if you're confused on that and you're listening, you just got to dig into this stuff and you'll know pretty quickly. But if you can answer that question, kind of how does understanding the Enneagram, understanding your own type, how might that affect your career choice and relationship choices? And if you could talk about that more as those in the heart center, that might be helpful for those listening.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I would say when it comes to relationships, actually, my husband and I, we just finished writing a book on the Enneagram and marriage from a Christian perspective. It'll come out October 1st. And
fantastic.
Right now, I am creating 45 marriage courses. Now, they're all the same, except it's one for each couple type. So there's 45 different relationship combinations. And so we are going to design the course so that it speaks specifically to your relationship. So for you and your wife being a 7 and a 9, you would get the type 7 and 9 course. But people will ask me all the time, like, okay, so which type am I more compatible with and not compatible? Who should I stay away from? Guys, that's just not how it goes. every relationship combination can be amazing when both couple types are growing and healthy, doing their own work. And each relationship combination can be the worst when you're not doing your work and you've totally derailed and you're blaming others. So when we walk side by side with one another and we know how our heart is operating, what our motives are, and how we're doing and asking for help when needed, then it's like we're walking side by side in this journey together and supporting one another. That is really where it's at. So you don't want to ever go, oh, well, this type and this type, ooh, that's a problem. Because they're all problems when they're all doing bad. So
yeah.
You can't nuance it that much. But it's absolutely important that you know yourself. And when one of the personality types starts growing, most of the time, I won't say all the time because can't go there, but most of the time the other person's going to be intrigued and want to grow themselves. Yeah. But anytime any of the couple types, when one of them stops growing, it really dramatically affects the relationship as a whole. So my biggest thing is to work on yourself alongside your partner, the person you're with. Now, when it comes to careers, again, I don't ever want to say, oh, well, you're a type two, so you should only be in the helping career.
Yeah,
that's just
right.
Not true. Or you're a three, you should only be in the acting business because you can shapeshift so often. Like, that's all types can do any of the careers. Again, it's recognizing where you have great strengths and where you have weaknesses and how to navigate that within the career. So for instance, if we take the type four, the fours have an amazing ability to see what's missing, to know how to bring in aesthetics, design. But if we only, it keeps them from exploring all the other facets in life that they can bring that same thing to. So if we were to say, oh, all they could do is art and design. No, oh my gosh, that's so not true. We want them to be doctors and lawyers and actors and project managers because they'll bring it in the way that is best from their perspective. It all has to go back to, again, growing. Now, certain personality types are going to excel in very specific ways, and that's great. And other types, the same type will also really struggle. So for me as a nine, leading a company as a nine, I have to constantly put myself out there and I can't allow that sloth to take over me. But my team also knows that about me and they know how to cheer me on. And that's the beauty of bringing alongside others to keep you on your best path, to spur you on. You know, it's just like a five. You know, if I had a five in my team, which I don't think I do. But if I did, I would want to make sure that they have enough time to go recharge and not be overly depleted. So again, right. It's working in our strengths and navigating our weaknesses that's most important.
Ah, so helpful. I just thinking, wherever you're at, whatever job you may have, you think about yourself sitting around a table with the team. It's not necessarily saying that I'm better fit for this job because I'm a two, or as a three, I'm the only one driving towards success, so I'm the only one who really cares about this company. It's more just saying, why am I the only one who's driving towards success here? And as you start to understand that, you go, oh, that makes sense. But wow, I could really utilize this creative four over here to help me see what's missing. Is that kind of
Absolutely.
What you're saying here? Is that it's really just about embracing whatever role you're in.
For instance, like with me and my company, my project manager is a three and my graphic designer is a two. And their brains work so much faster than my nine brain. And it's astounding and so beautiful. But so they have these things about them that really enhance what I'm doing, but I also have so much to offer them as well. And when we can see how our strengths can really edify and when we can collaborate well together, it's glorious. But as soon as I'm like, they aren't thinking like me, they should be like me. Then actually that's where things really derail. And so we want to be able to see the beautiful and glorious attributes that all the other types have and try to encourage those in whatever community we're in, whether it's the workplace, church, school, relationships. Yeah. If we can really spur each other on and accept and I'm speaking as a true nine, but accept and enjoy all the personality types, we really will see a lot of really beautiful things come into this world.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Kate, just one more thing that I guess if we're diving into this and we're having a conversation with somebody, like what would be a good way to start the conversation, or what would be a good way, maybe you have listened to this and you understand kind of your type now, but you want to start to help somebody else figure that out. Like what would be a good couple of questions? I mean, Beth, even if you were trying to figure out my type and who I am, how would you start that conversation? What would be some questions that you ask to help understand someone else?
Well, the easiest way is to literally go to my website and on that step, click on the take a free assessment, but just go to step two and download and print off the overview of all nine types, which has the core motivations that we went over earlier in this podcast, and literally walk the other person through it and say, hey, which of these really is your core motivations? And have them do like maybe one to five, one being not me at all, five being totally me, and having them mark down what they are in each of these, and then just asking them, okay, so I see type eight and three are really high, you know, for you. And then you would just want to ask more questions like, you know, so is when you get upset about something, is it because of your core weakness of lust and you're wanting intensity and control, but also your core fear being weak and powerless and harmed? Or do you get activated more as a three and that you don't want to appear, you know, as a bad image and unsuccessful and inefficient, and the core weakness of deceit, meaning you, it's all about your image. And eights are going to be like, no, it's not about my image. What you see is what you get. And then you'll know like, oh, okay, well, it's probably more eight. So that sheet is super important. And I would just recommend everyone having it on hand so that they can really help the other person navigate which one is their type.
And then it's really just about listening, right? Instead of trying to type the person or typing them before they even say anything, it's really just about listening to them, right?
And you really can't type other people because, like I said, there's so many nuances. Even in type nine, like I'm kind of an odd nine. I'm more assertive because I have an eight wing. I'm much more sociable. And so some people probably wouldn't peg me on the outside, looking, you know, from the outside as a nine. But I am totally a nine. Like I can't handle any tension in a room. Like my radar is just freaking out. So you can't type other people, even if you think you know them. You really have to help them for them to find themselves.
Wow. Okay. Well, I, as I say, I have so many more questions that I could dig into this. I'm just wildly curious about this on my own. And really, I've seen the benefit in my own life of how I've grown as I understand my type. And I've seen my friends go through the same thing. And so I'm curious, and I will continue to dig through your resources and any other resources that I can find out there. Beth, I'm so thankful for your time and the wisdom that you've shared with us. I'm really, really grateful. It is absolutely valuable, and I'm sure that people are going to listen to this episode a number of times just to soak up everything that you've said here. And I really, really want to encourage you, if you're listening, to go and check out Beth's stuff and the stuff that her team is making. It's so helpful and will really help you on your journey. Is there anything else, Beth, that you would say to someone on this journey discovering and doing what they're made for? What's one more thing that you would want to leave us with?
Yeah, you know, I just would really encourage you guys to take the first step in getting the Discovering You course. I think you'll be astounded at how much you're going to learn in just such a short period of time. I mean, you know, one, take the free assessment, get the 50% off coupon code, but then sit down with like your spouse or your older kids or your parents, whoever it is, your friends, and watch it. And one, have some good laughs, but also just start the journey. But for those of you guys that know your type, I really recommend you getting Exploring You. And if you're married, you know, the marriage courses will come out in the summer, but I also recommend married couples getting Exploring You. Like, so for you, Alex, you get seven and Mm-hmm. Your wife would get 9, and sit down and watch them together. You will be astounded how much you'll learn about your spouse. Like, oh my gosh, I never knew that's why you did that. And then you can really start to dialogue about how to have those clarifying questions and statements, because you'll be talking about it in this non-threatening atmosphere, in this very kind of curiosity learning atmosphere. So those are the steps that I would really take if you guys are interested in just digging in more.
Yeah. And then can you just leave us with an encouragement? I think you've done so well with the core motivations and really dug into all of that. And just if you can just leave us with an encouragement for people that are on this journey, how would you encourage us?
Yeah. Well, the journey, like I said, with the river isn't easy, but man, is it glorious. It really, really is beautiful. If you can just realize that either you're going to do the hard work and walk in the path of growth and experience just this transformational path that is just not inspiring for yourself, but for others. But don't be duped into, you know, like sitting down and letting the river sweep you down into just the not so beautiful sewage area. Like, just really press in. It's going to feel uncomfortable for a while, but when you really start to feel that transformational process happen, though it's hard, man, it will be this like radiant light of hope and joy that others will experience, but you will experience as well. And it will become like this never ending quest more. And it only just breeds more enjoyment for you and others. So start the path, though it be hard, it is so, so good.
That is beautiful. Beth, once again, thank you so very much for your time.
Yep. Thanks, Alex.
Oh, wow. What a ride it has been. As it is typically when I have an Enneagram-focused conversation with people, I feel like I just learned so much, but I also feel like there is so much more to learn. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say much more about this, honestly, as Beth really said enough to whet your appetite. Everything that she's talking about is exactly what Made for This is about. Starting from your core and moving out from there. Don't spend so much time focusing on your behaviors, but the motivation behind those behaviors and making sure that that is as healthy as it can be. So, my wildly different and unbelievably unique friends, that's it for us today. And as we wrap up, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the Made For This podcast and for leaving a rating and a review. Oh, I love those reviews on whatever podcast platform you are on. And thank you to our patrons. We launched a Patreon page recently, and you can go and join the Made For This tribe and grow and change with us as we share with each other through that platform. Go to patreon.com/madeforthis, patreon.com/madeforthis to jump in and support what we're doing here. Next episode, I'll be interviewing a photographer and a writer with Hodinkee.com who focuses on the intricate world of cars and watches. I'm talking with James Stacy, and you are gonna love it.
Nobody really just likes watches. You find that the same other 10 things kind of come up when you meet people who are really into watches. They really like cars or design or architecture. They really love other little weird oddities. You know, the watch is a fun one because there's a practical element to it. People like to know what time it is. But the actual fascination that behind and the engineering behind watchmaking, you know, applies to other things within the world, whether that's something more like clocks or even outside of timekeeping, where you just get into automatons and other little kind of mechanical oddities.
Until next time, go and discover and do what you're made for and begin to tell a better story with your life. This has been Alex Street, and I'll talk to you again soon.